This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Live here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram. Here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill. Anything you want to ask about, now is the time. I see already some of my good friends are here. And Tina, how's Lexi doing? Okay, so anyway, a couple of things I wanted to talk to. First of all, I had an insane week. It was very, very busy. Whenever I'm out of the office, and the week before I was out for a couple of days, and it's like nonstop. And anyone who's been in my office, and I know some of you have been there this week, know how crazy it is. But the funny thing is, I had a late addition on Thursday of a cat that needed surgery, had swallowed something. They don't know what it was. It was in the intestine. They can see it on x-rays. And it was like so chronic crazy. So we take a look at the x-rays, and sure enough, there's something there. It's in the intestine. We have no idea what it is. But the funny thing is this, that the referral came to me from one of my nemesis, which is VCA. I'm sure you all know the story. And it was from one of the hospitals that was acquired by VCA a couple of years before they acquired me. And, you know, I know the doctor. I don't know her well. And it was weird. I said, so who referred you? And she goes, this particular doctor, VCA. I go, really? A VCA is referring to me? That's kind of crazy. They don't like them very much. Anyway, here nor there, it turns out that apparently it was a surgery that the doctor herself wasn't comfortable doing or didn't have time. I don't know the details. In fact, I'm going to call her tomorrow and also give her an update on how the cat's doing, and either to send to one of the big VCA specialty hospitals, it would be ASAC or VCA West LA, it would be way too expensive, or who knows, they couldn't get it in. I don't know. All I know is they referred to me. They came, we did the surgery, it went great, but I was kind of surprised. So anyway, I was a late addition to my day. I didn't get out of there till who knows what time. And as you know, many of you know, I joke that I suffer from a very rare disease, and it's called I can't say no disease. So when someone is in need, I will see them. I just can't say no. How do you say no to an animal that needs help? I can't do it. Anyway, so you'll never hear from me. Well, no, I'm sorry. We close at 5 o'clock. Okay, we'll have to wait till tomorrow. No, no, no. If the animal needs it, it's getting done today. So, P.S., the next day, Friday morning, we get to work, and one of my techs looks at me and goes, joking. And he goes, okay, so what's today's foreign body going to be? I go, oh, no, my God. We're not doing 2 days in a row. Sure enough, I get a case comes in at probably, 2 o'clock, and with x-rays from elsewhere animal hospital, and this big clob of something in the stomach. I go, oh, no, you're kidding. And the intestines are completely empty. And the stomach is this big with something in it. So when you think about it, that's probably why the intestines were empty. There was something in there that was blocking the outflow, the pylorus. So the ingest of the food from in the stomach couldn't go anywhere, but the dog kept eating. It was huge. So, of course, we got to cut them. We anesthetized. We opened the stomach. There was a clump of stuff. It was food, but it was mixed with more than just food. And we think, talking to the owner, for some reason, for the last several days, and I think it's one of those chicken and egg things, you know, what came first? The dog started licking everything in sight, including fabrics and carpeting. And it was, it was ingesting some of the carpet fibers. And all of that stuff was just accumulating and this making this ball bigger and bigger and bigger, so much so that it couldn't fit through the pylorus, that it was like a solid rock. Anyway, took it out. We do what's called running the intestine. So that means we feel the bowel from the pylorus, from the duodenum, duodenum, however you want to call it, all the way through, all the way to ileocecal junction, all the way into the colon, and make sure there was no other area that was occluded, that was blocked. And then we flush the abdomen always. And even though we're very careful not to get any intestinal contents into, hey, B, any intestinal contents, we still want to make sure that there's nothing in there. So we end up flushing the belly a few times. And then, you know, dog wakes up, everything is good. We check the day, you know, after surgery, they were doing fine. So when it comes to intestinal surgery, I don't give that green light of, okay, we're good, till probably, it depends on the surgery itself. If it was just what we call an otomy, a gastrotomy, which was the second one, an enterotomy, which is the first one, the little foreign body in the cat, that's where you're cutting into the tissue, but the tissue itself is not diseased. It wasn't completely cut. There was no necrosis, meaning dead tissue areas. So then I feel better. It's usually 3 to 4 days out. We're good. Now, if we have what's called an RNA, that's a resection and anastomosis, that enough of the bowel was destroyed, just dead, because of whatever it was. There's no blood supply left. The tissue is blue. It's torn. Then we have to do what's called a resection and anastomosis. We have to cut, say, here and here, and then take the two things and put them together. But now you have 360 degrees around of sutures. You need to make sure that the blood supply is adequate to feed this area. And those are a lot more sort of cautious, a lot trickier as far as the healing, the blood supply, etc. Those, I like to wait at least, before I take that sigh of relief that we're good, at least 7 days, if not even a little longer. So I always tell owners, you know, we're doing great now, but we got to continue to watch very carefully over the next week to 10 days and make sure we don't have to go back in, clean something up. Maybe there was a leak. Maybe there's another area that was missed. So those are a bit more of a challenge. But anyway, so what's going on tomorrow? I have no idea. I mean, they do say that bad things happen in threes. The other kind of cool surgery, which I'm posting, you've heard of it, I'm sure. Maybe of some of you have had it with your pets. It's called an ear hematoma, or technically it's the oral hematoma. Oral means ear. The pinup is the ear flap. And the ear flap, sometimes erect in some ears, sometimes floppy in others, it fills up with blood. It's like it's huge blood blister. The problem is we have no idea what vessel or vessels are feeding this blister. It's usually from aggressive scratching or shaking their head, and that ear is going 10 miles an hour, more 100 miles an hour, back and forth. It hits the edge of something and pops the vessel on the inside, and the whole thing fills up with blood. This was one of the largest hematomas. It was the entire pinna, the entire flap was literally filled with blood. So it was a little Frenchie, French bulldog, and had a wicked, wicked ear infection. So probably in this case, it could have been either one, shaking its head because of the infection or because of just scratching aggressively. Anyway, all I can tell you is I filmed this one. You need to see. I hope you have the stomach for it. I really do. Instagram maybe make cover some of it up. I don't know. It's just, you see a geyser of, after I poked it with a blade, you see this blood just pouring out of this thing. It's unbelievable. But then you see the finished product. And that's, you know, again, for me as a veterinarian, two things I love to see. Number one is the immediate post-op finished product, where you take something that's aggressive, ugly, bleed, whatever it is, and all of a sudden you see nice closed up skin and you see happy dog, or you see some deformation on part of the body, especially when it's facial, and I do some plastic surgery and it comes out, and it is phenomenal. I have one, I remember years ago, it was a big hair lip in a bulldog, and you just see the whole, the mouth was kind of like this, there was no lip left, it was a congenital defect, and it was going straight to the nose, the poor dog. Anyway, after I did the surgery, this is true plastic surgery, all of a sudden it looks so cool, and this dog did amazingly well. So anyway, this is what's so much fun for me, and which leads me, by the way, any questions? Come on, I want some questions. You got to have questions. Something's going on with your pets. Tina, I love you guys too. So it goes both ways. I got to say, and Tina, who's here this morning, and my sister, who's here this morning, I see so many people when you grow up in an area and then you stay in this area and you become a professional, whatever. So in my era, I went to Beverly Hills High School, and so many of just this week alone, I think 3 or 4 of my classmates came in for whatever reason. And Tina is one of them. And my little sister's here. She graduated 2 years after me. So inevitably, I don't think a week goes by where someone from my era, which is from my older sister, class of 70, to me, 72, to my little sister, 74, class of 74, and my little brother's class of 75, that someone from our era at Beverly High doesn't come in. And I think the only reason is they know me, because in those many years, there are only 4 future veterinarians graduated from Beverly Hills High School. All right. One was a year ahead of me, Dr. Marty Schwartz. He's already retired. And I don't know how he retired, but he's a great guy. And he did a lot of exotics. I used to refer a lot of my exotics to him. Then there was me in my class of 72. And then my sister had a friend, class of 74, who became an equine vet, and I think it's in Colorado. And then, oh, and the year after me, there was a guy named my friend Mark Laxinetta, who also went to Davis, and he's an equine vet also, but he's down in like San Diego County area. So I'm the only one of that era practicing veterinary medicine, small animal, in LA. So I get it all the time. The oral hematoma surgery, I have clinical evaluation tomorrow. It'll be helpful to me. So the surgery, okay. For those of you, well, first of all, if you look at it when it gets posted, that'll answer all your questions. But I will tell you this, the whole idea, there are a number of techniques that were done. My technique, the one that I adopted, and it wasn't the original one, is I still make an incision along the entire length of the hematoma. The goal is that since we'll never be able to find the vessels, if we can eliminate the dead space, the hollow space, then there's no place for the blood to go, it'll finally clot. And that's the technique I use. And I still go through and through, but I used to go, it was very difficult because I would put the knots on the outside and you have to make a mattress suture. You have to poke holes. It was very challenging. The way I learned, interestingly, you can teach an old dog new tricks, because I learned this from one of my newer veterinarians who had done her internship after vet school at the ASEC. And that's a VCA ASEC, which is they have some of the best surgeons in town. And I learned a new technique. I said, oh my God, this is so much easier. And that's the technique I use to this day. Another technique, something I've seen, they take a cannula, they make a little hole on the top or the bottom of the hematoma, put a drain in and just let it drain. And they sew that in place. And it, I guess in a few days, it finally clots by itself. But then you have a piece of big plastic hollow thing in the ear that I tried it. I didn't like it. At one point, there was also a technique where they had a almost like a through and through staple gun. That is good, but it didn't work for me. You know, it's funny how you go full circle sometimes. I just found the technique I use works best for me. I'm fast. It's no big deal. The dogs seem very comfortable with it. And actually cats too. My black cat Ninja had a hematoma. I rarely see it in the cat. So I did, of course, I did the surgery on my own cat and he's doing great. I leave the stitches in. Usually when we do surgery, we leave sutures in for 10 to 14 days, depending on the technique that we use. If it's a blade cut, I'll go 10 days. If it's electrocautery or laser, because the hemostasis is so good, it actually delays healing a little bit. So even though there's no pain, no bleeding during surgery, because it is so good at hemostasis, that I usually leave those in for 14 days. When I do eye surgery, entropion surgery, and when I do ear, I usually leave them in for 21 days. All right. Oh, that's pretty good. Thank you, Tina. What does a male blue healer be neutered? 1 year. Okay. Anytime, if it's a healer, I would do a year. That's my new, I would go a year. If it was a large breed, which mature more slowly, or a giant breed, then I'm looking at maybe 18 months or even like a giant breed, I may go 2 years. It all depends on the animal's behavior, lifestyle, et cetera, because what happens is that a lot of places, boarding facilities, for example, they won't take a dog unless he's neutered. Daycares, groomers even. It all depends on the situation, but I will not do a large breed or a giant breed before a year. 100% no. I will come up with some excuse, write it to whoever needs to be written that they can't do it. So, all right, we have to take a break. I want to talk about something when we come back. Of course, we're going to answer your questions, but there's something that we need to talk about. I would like you to know what's going on in the industry and possibly why. And it's depressing. I'll warn you about that. But I mean, if you know it and you could tell other people about it, it could be, I would say it's never going to be preventable, but the situation can be improved. So don't go away. We'll wrap back after these short messages from our sponsors here at Pet Life Radio. Mark, take it away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, we're back. We're explaining about tear ducts. So we put the light not on the eyes. That's what we do that when we're looking for the corneas. Here we're looking to see, are the tears functioning? Their tear ducts open? And then if everything is functioning okay, we're going to see the green dye close. We're good. So in Bob, we didn't. So that means one of two things. Well, it means, I guess, one of two things. Either the tear ducts are actually plugged somewhere along the line. So we used an eye drop that has steroids. So if it was just inflammatory, hopefully it would decrease the inflammation and we'll be good to go. It'll open up. Or it can mean that there never was actually an opening at the tear duct. And those are a lot more challenging. Those require a little bit more aggressive surgery. Now, I say we can't solve it all the time. Technically, how I make the determination, you don't need it for this show. You want to go to vet school, we can have a great chat. But anyway, so what we're going to do is now we're going to, hopefully the tear ducts are open. We just, there, in other words, there is a duct papule where you can see it. So we're going to literally flush it. We take this super fine, fine needle. We put it into the opening and then we take saline and we just push, flush. And all of a sudden you get resistance. All of a sudden, boom, it goes and you can start seeing the stuff coming out of the nose. So yeah, we'll have to, of course, we require anesthesia. So yeah, make an appointment for the, oh, by the way, this week, I'm only going to be there Monday, Tuesday. I know I do this to myself to punish myself. So when I get back, I'm going to be so busy, I won't have time to go to the bathroom. And that's typical, but that's me. People, they never see me eat lunch. I go, Jeff, you never realize that. When do I have time to eat lunch? Who can stop for lunch when you have all these animals you have to see? So no, I never take a lunch. But my son and I, Brandon and I, are going to it's an HR health conference in New Orleans. And of course, we provide AirVet, our telemedicine platform, as an HR benefit to these very large companies. So he and I, he's CEO, I'm CVO, he's chief executive officer, I'm chief veterinary officer, and we are going to New Orleans for this conference. I will let you know when we come back. Okay, I wanted to talk about something. It's a little sad. What size of breed is Amstaff, small, medium? Oh, Amstaffs are definitely going to be considered large. Though there's some small ones, they're bred down, but I would say large. Where are you in vet school? Oh, that is so good. I'm so thrilled about the Thailand. You know what? Talk about old medicine. That is an old, old trick that I learned 40 years ago. And no one's been able to come up with something better. And here we still using, you know, look, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If you have something that is just always works, I don't care if the newer vets haven't even heard of it, never even heard of it. And here I'm still doing it and I'm thrilled. Okay, real quick. Oh, good. Janice, I'll see you then tomorrow. All right. So here's what I want to talk about. And I'm only bringing it up because I just heard a story this morning. It was all over my feed of another veterinarian who took her life. And I want to just share some statistics. So people, when I was early in my career, what we always used to say, what medical professional was highest in suicide rate? And it was the dentist. A number of years ago, maybe 5 or 7 years ago, it became the veterinarian. And I'm thinking to myself, how is this possible? This is the best profession on the planet. I after 42 years, I'm still running to work, working 5 days a week, loving every minute of it. I just don't get it. But here's some of the issues. First of all, here's the stat. Veterinarians are 3.5 to 4 times more likely to commit suicide than the general population. That is so frightening. And I'm sure for many of you, you're going, no, there's something wrong here. And it's called compassion fatigue. And when you graduate, I think this, honestly, this goes back to the veterinary schools, because I don't think that young veterinarians are really being taught that, yes, we're doctors. We are not God. And we cannot solve every problem. And we can do our best. And that's the best we can do, is do our best. Is every outcome going to be great? No. And you have to know that going in. You need to be comfortable with your skills, your talents, your knowledge, and that's the best you can do. And that's why I always say, of course, it's very important to know what you know. In my book, it's more important to know what you don't know. Because when you don't know what you don't know, in other words, you think you know it, that's going to get you into trouble. You need to know your limitations. We have veterinary specialists in almost every single veterinary field imaginable. When you, as a GP, run into that roadblock, instead of saying, okay, let's try this. I think this is what's going on. No, that's when we refer to the specialist. And I tell young doctors, when you refer a case to a specialist, it's a win-win. Here are the two scenarios. Number one, you get your answer. and your client loves you for making the referral. And that referral doctor, they don't do general practice. They're not going to steal your client. Number two, the specialist can't figure it out. Now you get to pat yourself on the back. You know, yeah, no, I couldn't figure it out. You know what? Either could he or she. So you don't feel so bad, but you're doing your best for the patient. Number two, high student debt. Now it is like with everything, anyone who has kids, I put three kids through college and beyond, and you know that it's very, very expensive. When people hear what I paid to go to vet school, UC Davis, number one vet school in the country, it was $1,500 a year, $500 a quarter. I mean, now it's thousands. And if you're going out of state, it's even more than that. The average vet student is graduating with $275,000 in debt. So that's a lot of money. And the problem is, does the needs and does the salaries allow for sort of being able, the ability to pay those large debts at a reasonable amount of time? So high student debt certainly contributes. Number three, and this one is what I know for a fact, took at least two of the ones that I know, is public harassment. It blows my mind. And you have to have, as with any profession where you're open to public ridicule, you have to have a thick skin. You have to know, yes, poop is going to happen. You do your best. You do have to know how to handle it. But now, I used to say when, you know, I still lecture a lot, and I'm more of the business of veterinary medicine. All right, how to make a success from your practice. And we used to say that from a marketing and advertising perspective, if you made somebody happy, you had a good result. Back in the day, right, there was no internet. It was mostly word of mouth, talking to your friends, you know, talking phones, etc. You would probably have three people. Your good, happy client will tell three people. But if you piss somebody off or you make a big mistake, they're telling 10 people, which means every time you have a problem with the client, you have to work over three times as hard to make sure that you do well with the other clients. Now it's different. It's not three people. They might tell 100 people online, but you have humaniacs out there. If you piss somebody off, they're going to tell thousands, and then you're going to get bullied. And online bullying is a huge factor in this. And if you don't have the skin, if you're not comfortable with yourself, that you know you did your best, who cares what they say? Look, I remember when earlier in my career, I used to really care about Yelp. And to me, when I'm seeing 40 plus clients a day, and I know that they're telling a lot of their friends, I know I get referrals from my clients, having new clients come in almost every day. I get someone referred to me by one of my clients. So at this point, and I'm not trying to be cocky, because I'm having a tough time dealing with all my new influx of clients as it is. So if somebody wants to read a bad review on Yelp and leave me, please, that gives me more time to handle the new ones. So a lot of people are very, very sensitive. And those online bullying is a terrible thing. And then access to means. And that is, we work in veterinary hospitals. We know how these drugs work. We have access to them. And a lot of these, unfortunately, veterinarians are actually doing it to themselves via drugs. And it's such a sad thing. So for you out there, now just know, your veterinarians aren't perfect. They may make mistakes. We all do. And you got to live with it. Do your best. Hopefully have a discussion with your veterinarian. Help your veterinarian learn from it. All right. I can only do what I do, try to work with the public only so much. But it is so important that you be very tiptoe around them. When they do something, there's no way it was malicious. They didn't do it purposely. It happened because poop happens. Sometimes it happens. You can do the exact same thing, all right, that you've done for 1,000 cases, the same drug dose per kilogram or body weight, pound body weight, kilogram body weight that is in the books, and you've done the same one so many times, 4 or 5 times a day. And all of a sudden you have a patient, you do the exact same thing, and it has a severe reaction and dies. You can't help stuff like that. It is going to happen. And I know it's going to happen. The best you can do is be honest with your clients and say, they ask me, no, I mean, I have clients that don't want to do a necessary procedure because my dog is 15. I say, look, yes. Oh, my dog has a heart murmur. Oh, it's a heart disease. I get it. But you sit there and you discuss the risks with the owner. Not only the risks of doing it, but the risk of not doing it. And when we have, for example, severe oral dental disease, and you know this dog already has a heart murmur, do I want endocarditis? Do I want these kidneys to fail? Because the glomerulonephritis, which is an infection, the flora ended up starting in the mouth. So of course you're going to talk to the owner about it and say, you know what? Yes, there is a danger, but you know what? The danger of not doing it is worse. We need to make that move, because otherwise, if you don't do anything and then something bad happens, you're going to kick yourself in the butt. At least you know you tried. And of course, we're careful. We are so cautious when you anesthetize an older animal or an animal that's infirm or has an underlying disease. They're monitored. They're hooked up to equipment. And fortunately, for me, at least at our hospital, 99%, we are in the lowest range of anesthetic complications. But have I had? Of course I've had. And I'm going to have more. And the best you can do is do your best to prevent it. But you just have to be honest, clients, and they have to know every time we do something, it's a risk. And also, and this is a message for veterinarians, if those who are out there, that young veterinary student, that know that you're not perfect. Know that when it happens, don't shrug it off. No, you need to communicate with the parent. You know where they're coming from. You have pets yourselves. And you feel sorry, sadness. I'm sorry that it happened. Not I'm sorry for what I did, because it probably wasn't you. So these are all the things that you have. I know that I've had clients that have had pets that lost, and they're coming to me not because how I handled the pre-death, it's how I handled it afterwards. And I got, in fact, speaking of Yelp, I once got referral. I got blasted on Yelp. And this is like, you know, I don't know, 10 years ago, whatever it was. And it didn't, you know, bother me, but I answered. I used to answer them. Now the experts say, don't even answer it. But anyway, I answered it. And all of a sudden I get a call from a new client, and he's a dentist. And I said, how did you hear about me? And he said, Yelp. And I asked, I said, are you not reading the fine print? Do you need glasses? Do you need, because if you're going to Yelp, it's not going to be pretty. He started laughing. He goes, no. I'm coming to you because I loved how you answered that client. And that shows me that you have heart. Isn't that nice? So I'm telling you, honesty is the key. All right, let me see. You got more people here. Sorry to be so downer. Any, how you doing? The puppies, I saw the puppies this week. They look great. And that little runt, boy, he was doing great. Again, I apologize for any of you that were downed by this discussion, but I just thought it's necessary. Look, and I agree that, you know, for Lee Williamson, that being honest and yes, we're not perfect. And I can only say that. And I say it all the time. I'm working with a case now. I'm the go-to. And it wasn't a mistake. It was kind of like a mild oversight. And this is what happens. As an example, it was a leg surgery. All the x-ray, everything was taken. The leg, the hip. And that was the problem. There was no other problem. So, you know, I'm not going to start taking full body x-rays on a case of a clear leg problem, an injury. It was a cruciate ligament injury. The dog is not doing as well as we expected after surgery. Look at the x-ray. I actually sent the x-rays to a radiologist to look at the surgical site. Radiologist said everything is perfect. But the radiologist says, just in the angle we took, we got a little bit of the abdomen. And we weren't looking at the abdomen. The dog has been otherwise was perfect. And he sees something in the abdomen. And we took better pictures of the abdomen. It turns out that the dog had another problem. And the lymph nodes, the caudal abdominal lymph nodes, were huge, pushing on the intestine. And the reason why the dog was having trouble was most likely impingement on a nerve. And we didn't think, why are we taking full body x-rays on a dog who was perfect, clinically, had a problem with the leg. We fixed the leg. The leg is taking forever to heal. Something was going on. Turns out to be a neurologic problem, not the surgery. But we just never saw enough of the x-ray to say, oh my God. So I'm helping the client navigate through all this. I already spoke to one of my oncology friends, and she is still using me as the go-to guy to help her navigate through all this. And there's no ill will. It would have been so weird. I mean, normally you wouldn't expect that. If I were to take whole body x-rays, charge somebody for x-rays that they didn't need, they'd be mad at me. So I didn't do it. So here's a case where, you know what? Making that little mistake and having the x-ray beam a little bit wider than I should have, I really needed it, made a difference in this dog's life. So anyway, one of those things you just never know. Okay, you got me talking again, guys. You know that's very dangerous, because now here I am, going over my minute. And the one, whenever I start getting dirty looks from our producer, Mark, then I know that, okay, Jeff, I'm talking too much. All right. I appreciate all of your good wishes. I hope if you have any trouble, you know you can always reach out to me. I don't have all the answers, that I promise you, but I have a lot of them. And it's not really just knowledge. I really think at this point where I have this ability, and it's not that I'm so smart, it's wisdom. And it's just purely experience. You do something long enough, you're going to get good at it. And 42 years in, I think I'm finally getting good at it. So anyway, see you next week. We'll let you know how our conference goes. I'll be in New Orleans. Oh, Mark is not going to be here next week. So he's probably taking another cruise. Another cruise? Yep. He kind of goes. When he retires, do you think he takes a lot of breaks now? Wait till he really retires. Anyway, so yeah, I'll be here with you guys on Instagram next week. Just you and us. So we have no commercial breaks. Don't worry about it. So save your really good questions. We can share with everybody. And we'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, here next week on just Instagram. In 2 weeks on Pet Life Radio and Instagram. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.